And tonight we'll be talking with remote viewer Ed Dames about things that could happen in the future. World events, catastrophes, evacuations, solar activity. We'll also talk about some of Ed's past remote viewing. That'll be all next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, get ready for this Coast to Coast ride. Foremost remote viewing teacher, Edward Dames, retired major, U.S. Army, a decorated military intelligence officer, an original member of the United States Army's prototype remote viewing training program. He served as a training and operations officer for the Defense Intelligence Agency's Psychic Intelligence Collection Unit, and he currently serves as the executive director of Matrix Intelligence Agency, which is a private consulting firm. He was the technical consultant to that feature film, Suspect Zero, where he coached, by the way, Ben Kingsley. And Ed Dames was even in that movie, playing the role of an FBI remote viewing instructor. Here he is back on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Major, how are you?
Happy New Year, George.
You too, Ed. I hope you and your loved ones are all doing well.
We're doing that there to Midland. I want to thank you for writing the foreword to my new book. I really appreciate that.
I had a great time doing that, and I'm glad that's going well for you.
The book is doing well, and my writer is still in the hospital because I think I wore him out after a year and a half.
You probably did. Yeah, he sends me an occasional email every once in a while, so he's holding on.
That's Joel Newman. I have a lot of respect for him. He's a good writer.
Tonight, Ed, I want to talk about some of the past, some of the present, and what you see way in the future. But for some of our brand new listeners, and we get many, tell us a little bit about remote viewing. What is it exactly?
Well, remote viewing is, for all intents and purposes, it's very, very structured extrasensory perception, very, very structured clairvoyance as well. And it's a teachable skill. It became teachable about 25 years ago. And my job was to take it out of the laboratory and into the deep, dark world of intelligence and massage it into an effective intelligence collection tool. And since then, 25 years, it's evolved into quite a powerful skill indeed.
Were you always a remote viewer, even as a child, or did that develop later on?
Oh, no. I was about as psychic as a rock. And remote viewing is not psychic. We're not psychics.
You're not born with it,
then. No. We avail ourselves, and as a teacher, I train this innate faculty that most of us would agree that we have that allows us to be psychic, but we turn that into a skill. Just like the ability to speak language. If you're not exposed to a structured language, whether it's Chinese or German or English or any other language during your childhood, then you can never effectively communicate. So what remote viewing is, and what it was, the discovery was by Ingo Swann particularly, who I dedicated my book to, the father of remote viewing, it is a syntax and grammar, if you will, that for the way that the unconscious part of mind communicates with conscious awareness, very structured, just like a piano sheet music. This is the sheet music for that defines that process.
Well, tell me how the development then for you in remote viewing came about. I mean, when you were in the military, did they just pick you, or what happened?
Well, in the early 80s, I was positioned at very high celestial levels of intelligence at the Office of Secretary of Defense, very, very black programs. And so I knew about all the stuff out there. My job was predominantly as a targeting officer. I was to select the targets, the Russian targets particularly at the time, Soviet targets, that presented the biggest threat. Potential threat to the United States, and to engineer the successful penetration, intelligence penetration of those targets. So I knew about there was a nascent unit, that a remote viewing unit that used altered states, because remote viewing wasn't invented yet. It was still in the laboratory development phase. And I became enthralled with that unit, started to use the unit in intelligence collection exercises, and I reached a point where it was so sexy that I stepped down to become a member of it, and I pretty much could have any job that I wanted, and I wanted that one.
Tell me what you see. Your book with Joel Newman talks a lot about your involvement in remote viewing and what you did. It's almost like a biography of you, but you get into some very intriguing stories, too, that that happened during your career. Do you think, Ed, the government, the military, is still conducting this program? You know, I've asked Paul Smith this. I've asked Russell Targ this. All of them say no, because if it was still going on, all of you would still be in it. Do you agree with that?
Well, I'm the keeper of the keys in terms of technology development for this, too. So I originally took all the best and the brightest from the military unit and formed the company, but now it's all civilian except for myself, retired military. No, the U.S. is not doing it for a number of reasons, mostly political, but China is going by leaps and bounds, including our sister science, psychokinesis, too. So that's a real threat. A real danger on the horizon. On my last chapter in the book, I touch upon this. The Chinese development.
Okay. There is criticism with remote viewers, whether they're right or wrong. You're going to get people to say, look, you missed this. You're wrong. Let's talk about some of Ed Dames, because we're going to get into Ed Dames' hits. Make no mistake about that. But let's talk about the ones where even you would admit, hey, it hasn't happened. I'm off. I don't know. What are out there? Which ones are out there, Ed?
The ones my misses in the past have been not as a result of remote viewing, but as a result of my misanalysis of the data, and of course our attempt to try to nail down future events in time. Those have been disasters because although we've solved the location problem, we'll talk more about that tonight, where we can nail any target on Earth or under the water down to within about 30 feet with a lot of work, but we can do that. We still have not mastered this time problem. And so that's been my biggest failure over the years.
Well, you know, unless you, I guess, see a date somehow or a calendar in a remote viewing session, it's probably pretty difficult to pinpoint a time, isn't it?
Well, it is, because mind is outside of time. If we can easily see large events, the same big events that I've been talking about on your program for the last 13 years, it's very, very easy for us to perceive these events ahead. It's like a big mountain out there. You can see it. But we don't have the parallax view to adjudge psychically, to adjudge the distance in time. Mind's outside of time. So it's very difficult to do that. But very, very easy to see these big events. And that's why the biblical prophets could see things coming down the pike thousands of years in advance. And but it's just that time element. When calendrical time and alphanumerics, numbers and letters, are still outside of our capability, but who knows?
Well, I like the fact and appreciate the fact that you stick your neck out, Ed, and at least, you know, you have the guts to say, look, I'm right, I'm wrong, I did this right, I did this wrong, and I'm changing some of this, and I appreciate that. And over the years listening to you, I've come to an appreciation and understanding of what you do. And I've got to tell everybody, you came on this program when Stephen Fawcett, the millionaire, went down in his plane and nobody knew where he was. And Ed Dames said he will be found near the Sierra Nevada mountains.
I first said he was dead.
Yeah. And you also said he was dead right from the get go. Mm-hmm. Both of those tragically things occurred. And,
well, everything evolves and changes and gets better. We learn from our mistakes. My team does. And, If we feed that back into the system, and just like any other skill, any other technology, there's no.
I got an email earlier from someone who said, "Ask Ed about Natalie Holloway." He was wrong about that, and I got to tell you, I don't think you were wrong about that. You have pinpointed what you think happened to her and where she's located. You've tried to get people, officials, to go and check. Nobody has. I think you even tried to get some of your own divers down there.
We did not work with officials there because we don't trust the locals. This is a common thing when we're overseas. We don't trust local police forces. Gee, I wonder why. So that was a clandestine operation. I think I showed you some of the video that we have.
Yes.
Where my man on the ground, in this case underwater, tried to approach the site where we felt that her body was dumped.
At this point, you would say not a hit, right?
It was a hit. We feel that our assessment and description of her demise is correct, but since we don't have ground truth, we don't have her skull, which we were after, then it's certainly not a hit, evidentially.
The one I hope you're wrong about, and we'll talk about later on, is the solar kill shot. Gosh, that one scares me, except as we get close to 2012, it appears with all these weather changes, and we'll get into some of those too, that you know, this could be right too. I mean, these are frightening times. What's your take on this bizarre bird dropping dead story? You've been following that? 5,000 in Arkansas?
Yes. Yes, I have. It is of concern to me. By the way, I'm a dyed-in-the-wool bird watcher, twitcher, as they say in England. So I was a semi-professional at one time. So birds are near and dear to my heart. What we do at Matrix Intelligence Agency on a case by case basis, because we don't try to look at all of these cases at once, because they may be different etiologies and different causes and origins. We'll take one case. In fact, we're going to do that. We're going to select one instance of this recent wave of bird deaths, and we're going to take a look at the cause of that. This happens to be a very, very easy task, almost simple for remote viewers. They're a very difficult task also, as you might guess, very complex task. But something like this is quite easy for us to do. It won't take more than a couple of days to get to the cause of one of those instances. So we'll do that, and I'll send that to one of your webmasters, I'll put the case up and then the source of the demise of the birds.
Okay, let's do that, because this is a bizarre story, Ed. There's something bigger going on here.
Well, we don't, in my business, we never go in with a preconceived notion about what one does.
No, I know that. Mm-hmm. I know that. I mean,
we have to remain objective. In fact, as a teacher, my students better darn well learn how to stay objective, because this is what psychics do. They get caught up in their imagination, it grabs them, and they lose the target. But we hold the target for us as long as we need to.
All right. What are some of the global catastrophes that you feel unfolding?
Well, in 1996, on my first coast-to-coast appearance, use the term loosely, I mentioned that there's going to be drastic weather change, climate changes in the future that will be so drastic and so severe and extreme that we as humans will not be able to grow crops the way we've traditionally grown them. Very serious, because not just for the price of food, but in terms of starvation. The seasons will disappear, and they're very, very harsh conditions. So we need to build biospheres or climate-controlled structures to protect crops. And then these structures will actually form the basis for habitats, for humans will migrate into them in the future, because conditions after the kill shot, after the sun goes nuke, will be very, very difficult on the surface of the Earth. But I wanted to say that also of several years later, around 1998, I mentioned, as a result of some of my own remote viewing, that what solar physicists and geophysicists do not understand is there's a flux, a magnetic linkage between the sun and the Earth's core that affects the weather and the climate. And this was undiscovered. Well, it turns out I wasn't the only one that said that. A very, very brilliant astrophysicist and meteorologist in England, who is not a government meteorologist, Piers Corbin, has now been pretty much vindicated, because he said, and was laughed at, that this particular winter in the UK would be one of the harshest on record, and it'd be nothing compared to what's coming. And he says that this is because that meteorologists are basing their predictions, their forecast, upon false science, wrong science. And he says, and he's been saying the same thing I did, and I didn't even know this, that it's the sun that drives Earth's temperature changes. And he further states that it's the sun heating up the Earth that's driving greenhouse gases, and not the other way around. So at least I have some support here now with a scientist.
I agree with you, and I think we're in this massive cycle, which you have somehow been able to pinpoint. And it's happening. There's nothing we can do about it.
Well, it's unfortunately, this cycle is a different kind of cycle. We're not talking about the typical average 11 and a half year solar cycle that right now the sun is waking up from a long sleep and starting to really wake up now. And of course, solar physicists know that the sun is not behaving normally. They're chewing their fingernails saying, uh-oh, this may get bad, and we'll talk about bad later. But what they don't know is this. All these 11 and a half year cycles are epiphenomenon for very, very big cycles on the part of the sun, which are about 11,000 years, give or take 1,000 years. These huge cycles are very dangerous to life on Earth, very, very dangerous. And that we just happen to be alive a couple of years before this next one kicks in. This is what I've called over the years the kill shot, series of very serious solar flares and discharges from the sun. And that we're, so this is one of these very, very big cycles that are starting and very dangerous indeed.
Ed, how many remote viewers, professional ones, are out there now?
I hire at any given time, I hire or employ about 16, because that's all I can handle. More than that is information overload. But professionals now that I've been teaching for 25 years, there's probably, I would say in the neighborhood of 80, is my guess. About 80, and many of them have gone on to start their own schools in Germany in the U.S.
Well, do they all clearly see the same things?
They're focused on different things. A lot of them are focusing because remote viewing is a lot of work. Many of them are focusing on terrorist attacks in the United States particularly. We just finished two projects, MIA, looking at terrorist designs on the United States, U.S. mainland, if you want to talk about those before out of order, we can do that.
Sure, I want to get into some of that too. Would you call time traveling? I mean, remote viewing time traveling?
Not in the sense of H.G. Wells' time machine at all, but. Since mind is outside of time, we can direct our unconscious attention to the past or the future as far as we'd like to go. If I wanted to, you as a student, if I wanted you to describe, and you would not know consciously what the target was as a student, because we're training your unconscious to do the work. If I assigned you the task of describing the largest land-dwelling creature that lived during Earth's Jurassic period, largest is a superlative. There can only be one. So all minds, all students would go to that self-same creature at some stage in its development, neonate or adult, and describe it accurately. So there's no limit time-wise.
But when a remote viewer taps into an event that hasn't occurred yet, which is somewhere out there in time, how are they doing this? Or what are they tapping into?
Because they're not tapping into anything. They're simply turning their attention in the other direction or in another direction, because we would not be able to discern these things, perceive them as remote viewers, if they did not already exist. So if we're able to download something that is connected with what we call, down here where the rubber meets the road, the future, it already exists. It's just over there. It's the same as a few minutes ago, I wished you Happy New Year. Where did that moment go?
Yeah.
Where is it in time?
Where it didn't go
anywhere. It still exists.
It's out there still, isn't it?
Yeah, it still exists. It always will. In terms of predetermination and those kinds of things, yeah, we've got some philosophical problems to deal with, yes.
At this point in your remote viewing career, is it safe to say that this may be one of these, I don't want to use the word the strangest times, but truly one of the most catastrophic times? Is that fair to say?
You mean in terms of our era, our age? Or
of what you see, what you feel.
Oh, absolutely. Totally. In fact, I took a sabbatical last 14 months to take care of my own family to prepare for what's coming, because I'd be a fool not to.
So you think it's imminent?
I believe that 2011 will be. Let's just use the U.S. for a moment. 2011, for those of us who live in the U.S., it's economic survival. It's going to be economic survival. But in 2012 to 13, we're talking physical survival.
All right, let's get into all of that when we come back in just a moment with Major Ed Dames, his website, learnrv.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We're also talking about his new work, Tell Me What You See. We'll be back. And our special guest tonight, Major Ed Dames, as we talk about the future, your future. That's all next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We're with Ed Dames. Ed, let's quickly talk about 2011. First of all, as you see, primarily an economic situation as opposed to anything else. What is on the horizon?
If I may just momentarily backtrack to the climate change on the planet Saturn. Presently, Saturn is experiencing one of the largest storms in history. Isn't it coincidental at the same time that the UK and Australia and the most of the world, droughts in India, are the climate change here, that we're undergoing such rapid change, that Saturn is also doing the same thing?
Oh, but Ed, we know they have factories and cars on Saturn, right?
I'm sure they got and a cap and trade too, probably.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's the sun. That's our sun. Our sun is affecting not just Earth, but all the planets in the solar system.
And they're all getting affected.
Because as a result of this developing super cycle, this 11,000 plus year super cycle.
We'll come back to climate change in just a moment. What do you see immediately for this year?
Well, as you know, 1997, 1998, on your show, I've said repeatedly that we are going to experience a global economic collapse. Of course, I was laughed at. And I said, furthermore, that gold would hit $2,000, and that was when gold was $230.
Mm-hmm.
So I was laughed at again. But folks aren't laughing so much anymore. I want to tell you backtrack a little bit more, though. In the military unit, when I was training the viewers, I was giving them all kinds of different targets to work on. One of the projects we were doing, just as for training purposes, was to look ahead in the future at the exploration of the outer planets, particularly Titan, the largest moon of Saturn. And as we downloaded this information about those activities in the future, I was noticing that there were no Americans on board these spacecraft, which were very sophisticated spacecraft. No Americans, just a lot of lab technicians from Europe, Russia, Germany, and Asia, the Scandinavian countries, but no Americans. And I began to think, what happened to my country? Meteorite strike, a nuclear war, what's going on? So obviously out of concern, I turned our viewing attention, this is the military unit now, turned our attention to the U.S. And to make a long story short, here we were in Congress, and everybody was finger-pointing at each other because the U.S. was broke and had no money to explore the outer planets. So that's when I realized that the U.S. was in trouble, and with some further work, I saw the day when the U.S. defaults on its interest payments. I called it the unthinkable.
The unthinkable.
Yes, we're going to default. But then along came these other events that we were downloading about this global economic collapse. And what that will mean in the next several years is the implosion of the financial system the way we know it today. That's what's going to happen. I want to make sure that I denote what we've downloaded via remote viewing as opposed to my analysis and my opinions, okay? That's important.
Okay. Well, that's critical. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So we got to see 13 years ago this global economic collapse and watched as gold went through the roof. By the way, gold will go up to much more than $2,000 after 2011, when stuff really begins to hit the fan. But I want to point out that at the same time, and I mean concurrent with this collapse that we're now experiencing, and it's certainly not over, it's just beginning, is a pandemic, an influenza pandemic, worldwide pandemic. So we're really watching closely for this because, as remote viewers years ago, we saw that it was concurrent with, it did not follow directly on the heels of, but it happened at the same time as the collapse. I don't know if they're mutually supportive or not, but it's at the same time. So we're watching for that right now as well.
Okay.
And then...
Go ahead.
And then comes the use of a nuclear weapon in anger. So 15 years ago, we were very interested in looking at the next use of a nuclear weapon in anger where there are mass casualties. And as I've been saying on Coast to Coast for 13 years, that's going to happen on the Korean Peninsula, a use of one by the North Koreans. But it's very interesting, the work that we've done in the last 2 months, to see how that's going to come about. Because although the North Koreans have weapons, they do not have an effective airborne delivery system, as you know. That hasn't been perfected yet. Their missiles have been going into the drink. There's multiple-stage missiles that they would like to use to deliver an ICBM. So what they've done, what we now know, we have good sketches and descriptions of this too. They're deploying nuclear mines, sea mines, and they're emplacing nuclear landmines. They're doing both those things now. So don't let them schnooker us. That's what they're really doing.
Am I remote viewing, or am I doing my intuitive thing? When I look at North Korea, and what I see down the line is when Kim Jong-il is out and his son comes in, I envision, or is it common sense? Who knows? I envision a military takeover to oust him, and whether they try to work something out with the South or not before they try to detonate something, because I think these two people are capable of doing that. What am I feeling at when I feel this?
Kim Jong-un is in his 20s, and he does not have the experience to take over that country, and he's going to have to, somebody has to do it, because Kim Jong-il is not going to last much longer. So what I envision is, yes, that you're at least partially right. I think that some of the I know some of the military generals will take things into their own hands. There will be a war on the peninsula, but it won't last long because China will intervene. And China has everything to gain in all these things going on in the world today. Economic warfare, physical warfare. China is going to come out ahead, but believe me. Yes, China has its own problems. It's facing its own bubbles and economic bubbles and all that, but it will come out ahead, way, way ahead.
All right, but is it remote viewing that I'm doing? Am I trying to be psychic, or is it just common sense?
It's just common sense. It's just common sense. Yeah, you can't trust. You cannot. We can't trust our conscious judgments that well. If we're good analysts, like I was in the military, I was still wrong a lot of times. But in remote viewing, we see true. It's direct knowledge, no middleman, no red tape, and I certainly cannot trust my analytical mind. But I wouldn't have stayed in this business. I'm not usually entertained. Wouldn't have stayed in this business 25 years if I didn't know, if I'm not still in awe at how powerful this is as a tool. No, you're simply trying to suss out what's coming down. That's what you're doing.
What is a futurist do? Is he a remote viewer?
No.
Or is he's another person who just sees trends?
They study the past and extrapolate into the future, and the folks that do it the best, I think you've had some on your show, are the best. But that's not remote viewing. Because remote viewing, we're looking exactly at what's coming down. That's why we see these black swans and these economic black swans and these discontinuities and these catastrophes coming, because they cannot be predicted. There's no way to do that. They're accidents of nature and time and space. So that's the power of using remote viewing, and why I've been looking ahead and warning people over the years, hey, prepare yourself psychologically at least, and better yet, prepare yourself physically for the stuff that's coming down. If you're not thinking about yourself, think about your family.
That's a good point. You have to. The psychological preparation, the financial, that's obvious, the physical as well. But you think now's the time?
Oh yes, for right now, money. You can hold off on thinking about the huge catastrophes. The war in on the Korean Peninsula is not going to affect you. Yes, the stock market will. Stock market will be down under 1,000 in about 3 years, the Dow. So, you know, right now it'll remain up because companies buy into it for various reasons. But this year is important to really preserve any wealth that you have, any cash, I mean physical cash, put it in the mattress, and buy gold and silver if you can, as much of it as you can, because those commodities will be worth something. That's what I've been doing for myself. I decided to use remote viewing 14 months ago to identify a rich placer gold sites in the West. So I've been using remote viewing to find them, going out, reconning the sites, doing site surveys, and tomorrow I leave to go actually harvest gold nuggets.
You physically are going to do this on your own?
I've done it. I took that's why I've been, you know, kind of out of touch for the last 14 months.
You're a prospector.
No more. Prospecting's over. It's time to harvest. I'm not talking mining. I'm talking these are rich placer sites, too, where it doesn't take much to pull nuggets out of the ground. But I've had to go out. Finding routes into these places, because some of them are very isolated, was difficult and all that. But all that work's over. Now it's just time to go and nugget harvest.
Once you nugget harvest, what do you do with it?
Well, nuggets are easy to sell. In fact, they're very, very, very easy to sell. They're rare because most nuggets were melted down prior to the 1920s. So there's not a lot out there. So there's the collectors buy them, and you can sell them to refineries as well, too. So many of the individual nuggets are worth more than their weight in gold, literally, because of their collectability. But I'm talking about a massive harvest, so I'll probably sell mine to a refiner.
Interesting. We're with remote viewing instructor, teacher, Major Ed Dames, author of Tell Me What You See, that he co-wrote with Joel Newman. Ed, climate change. Let's spend a little time on this and probably a little bit more time next hour as we're getting close to the top of the hour here. The Mayans, their 2012 date, have you looked at that date at all? And have you tied that into anything?
It's a funny thing. No, to set a remote viewing problem up like that would be very, very difficult, and we wouldn't be able to really have chain of custody between the anything. We wouldn't be able to get our teeth into it to really understand or know and trust our data. Y2K is an interesting juxtaposition to 2012. Y2K on coast to coast, a year, almost more than a year before Y2K, I was asked repeatedly what's going to go down. And I said, yes, we did look up ahead, and nothing's going to happen. Absolutely nothing. Worldwide, there's going to be no catastrophes, no nothing, where everybody was biting their fingernails about systems crashing, hospitals closing. There were a few glitches, but they were IT guys fixed them. 2012 is different. What we're seeing dynamically out there, and then even though we can't nail something down in time, we can watch these events transfold because we know what happens next, what precedes what. And there is something that's going to happen at the end of 2012 because we know that around 2013, the Earth and people are in extremely bad shape. You better be in a place that's protected in 2013. Don't even think about waiting any longer than that. That's the power of remote viewing. You can look at yourself using remote viewing or look at a friend and see what their conditions are in the near future. And then you'll get the real uh-ohs and chills down your spine if you do it now, because we're in very bad shape, and particularly because of the kill shot sequence,
which we'll get into too. Now, but with remote viewing, I mean, without, you know, being the killjoy here, do you ever have anything pleasant for the future?
When I thought about the show, and by the way, I was on your show January 4th last year too.
Interesting. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they call you Dr. Doom, but
I thought I wrecked my brain. I thought, man, I can't go on and just say you did, you know, all the. And I tried to think of something good. all I can think about is that what I've said before. After the dust clears, after 10 or 20 years from now, another race will be on the planet Earth to help us rebuild what's left of the planet. That's the only thing I can think of that's good.
And when might that be?
I'm thinking anywhere from, my guess is anywhere from 20 to 50 years from now. I don't think it'll be on my watch, but I like one of the reasons contact is so important to me and why I've worked on it surreptitiously so long is I believe that we have to rebuild with mentors or we'll do it again. Human nature is that way.
I've long suspected that's the reason for these abductions and hybrid operations that we
George, it is because I will tell you what, the race that's coming back, we've described them, we have good sketches of them. They look very much like us. And not like their abductors, and that's the reason why. When the British colonized Africa, they knew they would not be accepted. They had to take Native Africans back to England, train them, and then send them back to proselytize. That's sort of the situation here.
That's what they've been doing for all these years, haven't they?
It's one of the things they've been doing.
Yeah, fascinating. All right, into climate change, the predictions by Edgar Cayce, the old prophet, Lori Toy, Gordon Michael Scallion, they see North America, Ed, as being drastically altered in the future, that waters would be at levels that you can't even imagine. Do you see that too?
We have a sense that there's going to be a pole shift of around 11 degrees, but we don't know when that happens. And it doesn't appear to happen real close to the beginning of the kill shot sequence, but it does appear to be out there somewhere in the future. So that's a pole shift that causes that kind of thing. That's the only thing that could, really.
Because here are three people that apparently look into the future, and they all say similar things. And, you know, if Ed Dame says the same thing, we could have a real problem here.
I think it's pretty far out there, though. I think maybe possibly at the earliest, maybe 20 years or so. I put together a DVD called Viewing the Future, and I paid for that. It's free for listeners who want it. They can go to my website and get it. And I talk about these kinds of things on the DVD. George, the time problem. We can see a sequence. For instance, I already mentioned we've got this global economic collapse and a pandemic, right, concurrent with that use of a nuclear weapon, and then we wait for the kill shot, those kinds of things. But with the time spans, adjudging the time, the calendrical time, I don't know how to do that.
Interesting. It is fascinating. The area in England, coldest winter in 1,000 years, droughts everywhere, Australia underwater. What's going on here?
Well, that's the sun. The sun effect, again, if you look at that storm on Saturn right now, the storm's about 2,000 miles across. It's a heavy-duty tornado, like a cyclonic type of a formation. Our sun is waking up. It's waking up, and it's hungry. It's doing something out there, and this is a harbinger for the kill shot, for a sequence of very, very strong solar flares. But it's this magnetic interaction between the cores, the planets themselves, first, and then later on the solar flares. That's what's causing these drastic weather changes. What's it going to result in? Exodus. There's going to be massive exodus from places because you won't be able to raise food these places anymore. Too. Crop failures this year alone, you can imagine the price. Already the price of wheat and corn is through the roof. Watch 2011, what happened to the price of food.
Did you see the story where the scientists said that they have now created at least 50 downpours in Abu Dhabi?
I have.
With their ionizers.
I have. I think it's an amazing technology. I don't know what the effects will be or if there are any side effects at all, but I'm afraid to look. But I think it's an amazing, instead of condensation nuclei, seeding clouds and getting condensation nuclei on crystals to use an ion to form an ion cloud and have it do the same thing is amazing.
Do remote viewers have a responsibility to tell us things if they see it, and if we can be warned?
I don't teach ethics in my courses. I feel I have one responsibility, and that's to teach. I feel that I can't retire from teaching. I want to. I sure would want to, but I feel that I have to do it. My next basic workshop, basic training workshop, is my last one. That's in Reno next month. And you're sure welcome to come to that, George.
Well, I'll be close this time. All the other times that we've had this at, I've been far, far away, but I'll be in L.A., so that's close to Reno, no doubt. And I'd love to get up there and see Ross Mitchell, our announcer. I'll be back in a moment with Ed Dames on Coast to Coast AM.